You're listening to another edition of the Wealth Foundation podcast, where we help educate listeners on how to create a solid wealth foundation to build their dreams. And now your hosts.
All right. Well, welcome back, everyone. We're excited to have another show and had a great show last week. We really enjoyed having questions and answers from our guests and callers and people emailing. So today, we kept hearing that people wanted to hear more about how does this actually work? How is a policy designed? And give us the details. We've been doing a lot of overview of how the infinite banking concept works. And once again, we have founder of Hurricane Financial and infinite banking expert, Frank Riedel.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back, Frank. Great to have you here. I know you're very knowledgeable on this subject, so I'm really excited to dive in and give people what they've been asking for. On the previous show, I remember you making a comparison with infinite banking and whole life and how you're saying whole life itself is just the chassis upon how this whole banking concept is built. And I think that's a great analogy. I think if you think about it, everything has the same frame and the same basic components, but maybe you can describe in automotive terms or just something to give people a visual of what makes this concept different and how is it built specifically to make it turbocharged?
Well, you know, there's a really simple way, Eric, that I like to illustrate this when I'm talking to somebody on the phone, because I'm visual. So I like to give visual references, you know, when I'm describing infinite banking so that somebody can understand. And as we mentioned, you know, with the 30,000 foot view we talked about, I think it was about a week ago, we discussed that infinite banking concept is really the policy portion of the concept is the smaller portion of it. A lot of people, when they hear infinite banking, they think it's a magic bean or it's a magic policy. It's not. It's a policy that is custom designed and turbocharged to do something that regular policies aren't. But keep in mind that the policy is still, in my opinion, somewhere around maybe 25% of the overall strategy at the most. I mean, it's maybe less than that. The majority of infinite banking is what happens in your life and the opportunities that you have to redirect money that was flowing away from you and have it channeled back to you. That is infinite banking. The policy is sort of like the chassis. It's what we're utilizing that policy as a way to have a tax favorable strategy in which to move the money through so that we can build wealth in a tax friendly environment. So here's how I would think about it is this. Let's picture you have a car and it's an expensive sports car on one hand and you have a minivan on the other hand. And the minivan is, compared to the sports car, is not really considered that exciting, but it's practical and it'll get you around. So if you compare it and you look at it, whole life is often viewed like a minivan. That's how a lot of people would describe it. If you talk with people who are not, there are probably half the people you talk to out there who love the idea of whole life and get it and understand the benefits of it. And then there's the other half of the, you know, people out there that I speak with that are sort of the buy term, invest a difference type of mindset, which is fine, I guess. That is usually the person that doesn't really understand the benefits and they just see insurance as being expensive and a death benefit and it's something that is really not going to benefit me today. Well, that's completely different from a policy that's designed to work for infinite banking. So a lot of people would see a regular traditional whole life policy a lot like a minivan. It's practical. It serves a purpose. It's not very exciting. And it's going to have certain advantages, but you know, it doesn't really appeal to necessarily a lot of people, but someone who wants one for a particular need, there's a benefit to it. But if you were to take the excitement and the speed and the power of a sports car, and let's just say you could actually do this. Let's just say you could take, Eric, you could take the parts out of the sports car and put it under the hood of the minivan. Now, let's just, you know, take into assumption that it works and, you know, would start when you turn the key and all that. I don't know. I'm not a mechanic, but I can tell you that if you switched out the parts and that van would actually still turn on and drive, what would be amazing about that? That van would be able to do some things that every other minivan couldn't do theoretically. So if you had a more powerful engine, if you had better suspension, better, capabilities and turning radius and whatnot. You could do a lot of things in a minivan that you couldn't do in a regular minivan. But on the surface, when you see it sitting in your driveway, it's going to look like every other minivan. Well, whole life is a lot like that too. You know, it's kind of plain vanilla when you think about traditional, typical whole life policies. But that is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about redesigning something from the inside out. That takes a lot of energy, a lot of effort. It takes a lot of knowledge and experience to design it right so you don't cause taxable issues within the policy because it's misdesigned. It becomes a modified endowment contract or a MEC. So think about it this way. If you were able to take the sports car and drivability and you put that into this minivan or this whole life policy and you started re-engineering it. So you took certain elements of the whole life policy and you say, hey, we don't need that. We'll take it out. We don't need this. Let's remove that. Let's replace those parts with these parts that do so much more. And if you have that, now you have something that's really functioning differently. And that's what I think people miss when they talk about, yeah, but I get all this. I get the banking thing. I like it and everything, but I'm really having a hard time with the whole life piece because I've never really been a whole life person because it's expensive and blah, 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 blah. And I've heard all the excuses. What I've also seen, Eric, in my career is that when you take time to explain the difference between traditional, typical whole life, like your parents or your grandparents or my grandparents had, you're going to find we're talking about a completely different animal. Or in this case, to use my analogy, we're talking about a completely different vehicle. We're talking about something that's being re-engineered and redesigned to do something that your typical whole life policy could never do. So we're going to put in something called a paid up addition rider or a PUA. That's sort of like turbocharging the policy, turbocharging the minivan, if you will. So we're going to turbocharge that policy by putting on a paid up addition rider. Now, don't get hung up in the weeds because I know some of you who might be listening are insurance people and you're listening, trying to find out, hey, how can I finally get my head around infinite banking, be able to offer this to clients? And your first thought when you hear a paid up addition rider or PUA is, our whole life policies at my company has a PUA rider. What I will tell you, and you'll have to understand this maybe at a later date, all PUA riders are not equal. There are flexible PUA riders. There are PUA riders that allow you to do different things than you can with your usual, typical, vanilla, everyday PUA rider. So a lot of PUA riders will allow you to put the dividend back into the policy. So some people, clients, Eric, a lot of clients will say, it's their expression, not mine, but they'll say, hey, I'm reinvesting the dividend back into the PUA rider. Oh, that's fine. If you want to think about it that way, it's basically a dividend option. Your dividend is now going to automatically roll into the policy values and not be sent to you in a form of a check. And that's true with pretty much all PUA riders. You can do that. The difference with a different type of PUA rider that like what we're talking about is you could put additional funds in over and above that up to the limits of the MEC line or the modified endowment contract line. So when you do that is we're able to fluctuate the MEC line high enough for the first 7 to 10 years and give you a little bit more room for banking. And the more you use it, the more you're going to have that advantage as you go through those years. They're really the most key important years with infinite banking when you're talking from the policy's perspective is really that first 7 to 10 years, Eric. Once you get beyond that, most people are going to outgrow the policy at probably 7 years, which means that's a good thing. That's not a bad problem to have. The author of the infinite banking book, Mr. Nelson Nash, has multiple policies. A lot of people that I know have multiple policies. I have some clients that own 7 and 8 policies. So when you have multiple policies, it means that that's a good thing because it means you've gotten to a point with one policy where it is now sustaining itself. It's now something you've outgrown and you have resources now within that policy and outside that policy to take that and start a new one. So I always tell clients, Eric, that if you get to a point where you've supercharged or turbocharged this policy up for about 7 years and you've looked for infinite banking opportunities, money that's flowing away from you, and you've redirected the streams back into your own system of finance, and now you've somehow maxed out or capped out that policy, don't cry. That is a happy day because at that point in time, your policy is most likely going to sustain itself at that point, which means that you can start looking at this as an equity policy and take some equity out of it, like you would if it were an investment property and you took out an equity line of credit on it. You take out a loan out of the policy, take some of the values out that you built up and go start two more. And when you start two more, it's the same process. You're building, you're turbocharging it with a PUA rider. You're building it up, and eventually those will get to that point. It may not take you 7 years. You might do it inside of 3 years, depending upon how it's built and how you utilize it. Then you take equity out of those and you go start four more. Next thing you know, you end up like some clients that I have who have 7 and 8 policies. Are they all on themselves? Not usually. All right. So usually what would happen, Eric, is you'd have a policy on yourself. If you're married, you'd have a policy on your spouse. You might start having policies on your adult children. I don't recommend banking policies on children under 18 because they just don't function the same as they would because you're limited on what you can do in the way of riders. So, you know, if they're adult children, then great. There's just so much you can do once you turbocharge a policy, and it's going to happen very, very quickly. So to step back from it, let me just wrap up by saying this. When you have a regular whole life policy, it is just like the plain vanilla minivan. A lot of investment opportunities out there have risk associated with them, have taxable issues associated with them, and people like them because of one thing. They have speed and ability, scalability, and ability to basically operate fast. But what if you could take all the operating abilities and speed and precision in which you would get in certain investment vehicles, and through infinite banking, place that inside a no-risk environment, meaning the minivan or the whole life policy, and be in a tax-friendly environment? So now you've taken away the two biggest issues that you have with the investment, or two biggest issues you would have with the expensive high-end sports car, which is risk taxation. And you've now taken the best of that, planted it in a tax-friendly environment and a risk-friendly environment, and now you really have something. Now you have the ability to control your financial future.
Yeah, that's funny, Frank. That reminds me of some high school friends of mine. They had an old Volkswagen Beetle, and I don't know if you remember the Beetles, where everyone kind of made fun of them and Slug Bug Red or the childhood things that you did, and you wouldn't think anything special of it. Well, these guys weren't academic geniuses, but they were definitely mechanical geniuses. And just like you're saying with the minivan, they actually removed the engine from this Volkswagen Beetle. And apparently you could put in a certain type of Porsche engine. And they did that. They put in a Porsche engine into this Volkswagen Beetle, souped it up, made the suspension completely different. Anyone who didn't know these brothers, didn't know this vehicle, and saw this Beetle would just laugh when you saw it. But if you ever were at a stoplight or anywhere else, they would blow you out of the water just with the modifications they've done. And that's essentially what infinite banking is doing. It's, like you said, it's taking something very plain vanilla, souping it up and making it perform. So not everyone's going to drive a minivan and soup it up. Not everyone's going to drive a Beetle. It all depends on your life stage, where you are, where you want to go. And that's the components that we add into these policies to make them perform like you want. Now, you mentioned, Frank, the modified endowment contract. That's a whole entire show that we could probably do, and so is the paid-up edition rider. But maybe you can just give a brief overview of why is there this modified endowment contract, and what does that do as far as the limitations?
Yeah, you know, there was a MEC limit, a MEC law that was passed in 1988 by Congress. And you know, Eric, I always loved it to ask people a simple question. If whole life is such a bad thing, why did they create a limit as to how much you could put in there? You know, I mean, just think about that for a second. If a law is being passed that's going to legislate and limit the amount of money and wealth that you can transfer into whole life, then why, if it's such a bad idea, why would there need to be a limit on it, right? Because nobody would do it if it was so bad. But people were doing it prior to 1988 at a staggering rate. So it was a way to kind of limit the amount of money that could go into the tax-friendly environment, which would be the whole life environment. I think, you know, in my personal opinion, you know, our system, the way it's designed in this country, there are a lot of forces that would love to keep you in the market, would like to keep you in a taxable environment. When you get outside of the control element, you start getting into the private sector, which is life insurance, for instance, you have now something different. So you have now a contract between you and a, in this case, 100-plus-year-old insurance company that has a tremendous history of growth and dividend pay and whatnot. The MEC simply separates the difference. The easiest way to understand it is it separates the difference between the investment world and the insurance world. And on one side, you got the insurance world that is tax favorable position, is at a tax favorable position that from that standpoint on that side of the line. The other side, you limit control and you have taxable issues over on the investment side of the line, whether it's real estate investments or stock market investments or whatever, you know, other type of investments, you're going to have taxable issues on a lot of that, like you would with a 401k, for instance. So what happens here is the MEC law was designed to kind of create a separation between the two. And a lot of people, there's a lot of books I've read where a lot of people actually will give, you know, case studies and talk about the fact that, you know, when it was done, it was to limit the amount of money that could be moved into the private sector. But whatever the motivation was, a law was passed in 1988. So the bottom line is that law is there to separate those two worlds. And so when you build these type of policies, Eric, you have to have one eye on the MEC limit. The great thing about the software that we utilize with these particular carriers is that it'll tell you exactly where you are as you're designing it. So as we're taking out parts and replacing it with faster parts and we're turbocharging a policy, we're going to look and see, all right, are we good now? Is it a MEC at any point in time in the future? And if it does show a MEC in the future, then we make the adjustments in the software so that that goes away and that's no longer an issue. And then the software will tell us, hey, listen, the policy is great just the way you've designed it. As long as the policy owner stays within the framework of this policy, in other words, if your MEC limit's $6,000, you don't send $6,001 into the insurance company because that extra dollar will put you into a MEC environment. And there's an old saying, once a MEC, always a MEC. But it'll show you right up to the penny of what your limitations are with the MEC. And, you know, a lot of people, Eric, will come to me and they'll say, well, Frank, what is the MEC limit for a 32-year-old male? And I'm like, hey, it's different. I can have 100 32-year-old males with the same amount of premium going in, design the policy slightly different on each of them, and the MEC limit is completely different on each guy. So the MEC limit is not a hard and fast number. It is an adjustable number. So as we're able to supercharge the policy with the PUA rider, as you mentioned, Eric, you alluded to the fact that we'll have a program upcoming where we'll talk in more depth and detail about PUA riders, about MEC limits and how they correspond. But the long and short of it is we're able to push that MEC limit higher by adding certain features to the policy. And it's only a short-term thing. So we're only able to do it for a number of years. But it gives you a lot of headwind and a lot of chance to operate the policy at a high level in those early years so that eventually you're going to get to a point where you've outgrown the policy. You can't do some of the things in the policy that you were able to do in the first, say, 7 to 10 years. But now you're at a point where you're starting to look at, okay, this policy is really, it's running pretty darn well right now. I'm going to take some values out of it and start the next branch. Some people, my clients, a lot of times they'll think of it because they think of this as their own family banking system, you know. So they'll start their next branch of their family banking system. It's a conceptual structure, but it's exciting when you start seeing it through that lens. But it's the MEC is a real thing, so it's something you have to be aware of. I've had many people that have brought policies into me. These are not policies that we did or designed. We're talking about them hearing somebody else doing a college planning seminar or an infinite banking seminar, and they went to that person. That person, you know, was excited, you know, about infinite banking, rightfully so, but didn't really understand how to design the policy correctly, and in turn, designed a policy that turned into a MEC. So that's the one thing that I think we've hung our hat on here, and we've always been very proud of the fact that the policies that we design, Eric, are non-MEC policies. And they won't be a MEC in the future as long as you stay within the framework of how we design it. And that's where I take the time to educate clients and make sure that they understand, use it this way, use it as it's intended to be used. And if you do these things, you'll be fine. And that's why I have a lot of clients that come back to me a year, 2, 5, 10 years down the road. They'll come back and they'll say, you know what, Frank, that policy that we're utilizing, it's going great. I'm going to take a little bit of money out, or I'm going to pay some money back, or I'm going to apply some additional money towards the, you know, the MEC limits. You know, can you give me some advice on the best manner in which to do that? And that's a fun conversation, because now you're working with somebody who's actually utilizing the policy, and they're not just treating it like an insurance policy. They're treating it like what it is, which is a very dynamic system of finance.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you brought up a really good point earlier, Frank, that the policy is only a portion of this whole overall concept. You know, today we're not going to tell you how to build exactly. Like you said, you get 100 people of the same age, it's going to be different for each of them. But the whole structure and the way it's built, obviously, one, you want to have a mutual company that is owned by its policyholders. You want to make sure you have non-direct recognition. You want to have policy loans. You want to have these paid-up addition riders. You want to make sure it doesn't mech. In future shows, I think we're going to dive deeper into how to actually utilize this. I mean, so many people are hung up on the concept of the whole life and the riders and the additions. But once you have that, then this is where the infinite and infinite banking kicks in. I mean, we can talk about some creative ways that your clients and my clients and myself included are using this to actually grow our wealth in a tax-free, turbocharged manner. I love that turbocharging aspect of it.
So as we close today, I'd like to just add one more thing. It's important that everybody who is interested in infinite banking and the concept of this to take the time to talk with an authorized practitioner, somebody who is certified and trained to actually know, speak the language, be able to possibly design you something to look at and answer all your questions very accurately down to the letter. So it's important that you have that chance. And my recommendation is you would go to the website you see on your screen, call the phone number that's on your screen, set up your own personal consultation, and see for yourself what could happen in your scenario and what infinite banking could do for you and your family. That's my biggest recommendation to people today, is just take that step. It doesn't hurt to put your toe in the water and look at it. And I will tell you, infinite banking is not for everyone. But it's amazing how many people see it for the first time. And Eric, the response I hear, I wish I should put a jar on my desk and just have, you know, somebody stick a quarter in there every time I've had somebody tell me, man, why haven't I seen this before? It's really too bad I didn't see this 20 years ago. If I had a jar full of quarters on my desk, I mean, I don't know how many jars I would have already full of quarters. It'd be ridiculous, but you know, I'd have a lifetime supply of quarters, because it seems like I hear that every single day from somebody. So it's really quite amazing. So my recommendation to you is to take time, make the call, and set up your own consultation today. And let's see what infinite banking will do for you.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Foundation podcast. The contents of this podcast are for informational and educational purposes only and not to be viewed as advice. Results may vary, and listeners are encouraged to seek professional financial advice. To learn more or to submit a question, please visit www.thewealthfoundation.org or call 844-OWN-BANK. That's 844-696-2265. Find us on your favorite social media by searching for #TheWealth Foundation.